While no one in New York has been sentenced to death in the state courts for more than a decade, New Yorkers can essentially be sentenced to die in prison with sentences that don't offer an opportunity of parole. But State Senator Luis Sepulveda, a Bronx Democrat, is hoping to prohibit that fate as he recently introduced legislation banning life sentences without the possibility of parole, and he joins us now to discuss his proposal. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you so much for inviting me again. Always have a great time being on your show.
Oh, that's very nice of you. So why should the state ensure that all incarcerated New Yorkers, no matter what they're convicted of, have a shot of leaving prison at some point?
To really understand the issues involved with life sentences without the possibility of parole, you have to really go back to the history of incarceration in the state of New York. Before 1972, there were about 300,000 to 350,000 individuals that were incarcerated. With the war on crime, starting with President Nixon, and then the complete indifference to who's impacted by incarceration during the Reagan years, we went from about 350,000 people incarcerated to almost 700,000 people incarcerated during a presidential term. And then you fast forward again to the criminal justice bills that were signed by President Clinton, what you saw was an incredible amount of people, primarily of color, that were being incarcerated. And so began the period of mass incarceration. We've gotten better in the last decade. The philosophy, not only of myself, but other advocates, is such that when you talk about incarceration, you have to remember what the original principle of incarceration was in this state and in this country, which was to rehabilitate. It wasn't punitive in nature. It was to make sure that individuals have an opportunity to further their lives if they are incarcerated and have hope that, in fact, they can get out one day if they do everything that we ask them to do and they demonstrate rehabilitation. Remember the name. It was correctional facilities. They are correctional facilities. They are not there to house people until their deaths. Now, when you look at the numbers, over 50% of individuals that are incarcerated are African-American or Latino, when the population is a lot less than 50% for that community. When you see the longer sentences and those that are incarcerated, primarily African-American and Latino. So what you have here are policies that began during Clinton and Reagan that to some degree continue until today, where you're using mass incarceration on a two particular ethnic groups. And if that's not a sign of racist policies, I don't know what is. And so who's impacted by this bill? Primarily people of color who have longer prison sentences. Look at the economics. We spend about $80 billion a year in this country on incarcerating individuals. $80 billion a year. I'd rather spend that giving people free tuition at colleges or other places. But $80 billion is a toll in this country when a lot of these individuals that are incarcerated have no business being there. Now, why do I say that? If you look at older individuals that are incarcerated, their rate of recidivism is minimal, yet it costs us more money, much more money, to keep these individuals incarcerated. They pose very little threat to society anymore, if any. So it doesn't make sense as a policy that we have individuals that are incarcerated that are from communities that I represent unfairly, through criminal justice laws until recently we reformed them, that were unfair and were racist, if not in policy, certainly in practice. And so it's unfair that individuals should not have the possibility of being released if they're doing what they're supposed to do and get rehabilitated. It just doesn't make any sense.
To be clear then, you don't see prison and prison sentences as a punitive measure in any way, shape, or form. You don't think they should be used in that capacity.
That's correct. I mean, look, you look at European countries with their incarceration system, it's much more different than what we have here. Prison should not be the end of your life. Prisons are supposed to be to rehabilitate citizens who violate our laws. People who commit nonviolent crimes certainly shouldn't be in prison for the rest of their lives and die in prison. So absolutely, it's about rehabilitation. It's not about being punitive in this society.
Assemblyman Mike Lawler, a GOP representative from Hudson Valley, has argued on this show that people who commit certain crimes, certain very violent, heinous crimes, are essentially beyond rehabilitation and should be imprisoned for the rest of their lives. Do you think that there are certain crimes that people can't come back from?
Let me make it clear. It's the possibility of parole. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's going to grant you automatic parole.
Right.
Now, whether someone should see the light of day if they've committed a heinous crime is for our commissioners to decide. But every individual should have at least the possibility of going before the board and saying, I have done X, Y, and Z. I've rehabilitated myself, and therefore I should be released. And on a case-by-case basis, their request should be analyzed and decided on. But to say that absolutely under no circumstance an individual should have no parole, no possibility of parole, is just not, it's not consistent with our principles of rehabilitation.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with State Senator Luis Sepulveda about his proposal to ban life sentences without the possibility of parole in New York. And when we think about parole, I think it's important to recognize that just because someone has an opportunity to obtain parole doesn't mean they will be granted parole or even get a fair shake at a parole hearing. So what can you do to ensure that that opportunity is a meaningful one when an incarcerated New Yorker does come before a parole board, whenever that is?
I can tell you this. Certainly, what we do is when we analyze the commissioners that are recommended by the governor to be on the board, we as legislators analyze each candidate, and we look to see what their philosophy is. I mean, previously, the board was composed primarily of people that were in the law enforcement segment of society, former DAs, police officers, things of that nature. What you're seeing now is a shift where it's much more inclusive of people that have perhaps a social service background, perhaps a advocacy background. And so through the boards, me specifically as a state senator can vote in favor or even try to recommend individuals that have a rehabilitative mindset as commissioners rather than someone who automatically has a knee-jerk reaction to keep somebody in prison for whatever crime they've committed. So in order to secure that you have a real shot, you really have to have individuals that are much more diverse than what you had previously. People that understand incarceration, the families of incarcerated, the fact that our incarceration system is just so inherently racist and treats wealthy people a lot more different than they treat people that come from poverty, and regardless of your color. But it's not an inherently fair system. It's inherently unfair. And we have to create a system that's much fairer. And I think through our criminal justice reforms and through this bill, it's a step in that direction. I also urge people to pass the Less is More bill and the Elder Parole bill. I think if you combine these kind of things, you'll see a radical positive change on the level of incarceration that comes in our communities, communities of color, and throughout the state. You'll see a much more positive impact on that, and people will get out that deserve to get out. As opposed to today, if you have no possibility of parole, then what is your incentive to rehabilitate yourself?
Our conversation has been almost entirely through the lens of a person who's been convicted of a crime. To what lengths have you thought about this legislation through the perspective of crime victims and the family members and loved ones of crime victims who might not necessarily embrace this type of policy?
I am very sensitive to anyone or anyone's family member who was a victim of a crime. I live in a community that has a high crime rate, so I am not desensitized, and I certainly can empathize with families and sympathize with families who have victims or victims of crime. But again, the philosophy that we have and we have had in terms of incarceration is to rehabilitate. Now, people get angry if it's a heinous crime, I understand, crime against children. I understand all of that. But as a society, we have to be consistent, and we can't change our values based on our personal experiences. I have families that have been victims of crime. It's just that as a philosophy, we've always created a system where we want people to change. And if someone can demonstrate that change, then they should have the possibility of going before a parole board. And again, it's the board that will ultimately decide it. But, you know, I feel terrible for these families, but we have to be consistent. And, you know, generally speaking, people who commit these heinous crimes are not going to get paroled by the board if it's that so severe of a crime. But that possibility should always exist.
when should that possibility exist? Should it come after 20 years, come after 30 years? Because obviously there's a big difference to spending, you know, 60 years in prison without the possibility of parole versus spending 10 years or 20 years. So when would you want to see that opportunity present itself?
Again, that's on a case-by-case basis. Generally speaking, you know, if you have a 25-year life term, generally speaking, you're going to be held for at least 15 of those years. My opinion is that people should have the possibility to roll if they have these long-term sentences, at least if they've served 15 years. But that's on a case-by-case basis. There may be some that probably 5 years. But to me, generally speaking, when you look at all the data, usually around 15 years. That, I think, would be close to a fair measure. But again, I don't want to create an environment where someone who's demonstrated that they have rehabilitated, they're no threat to society, where they should be locked into those 15 years, case-by-case basis.
Finally, in preparing for this interview, I was checking out the website for the Death Penalty Information Center, and I noticed that three sentences from their description of New York's death penalty history appears almost verbatim in your bill memorandum. So I was curious if that indicated the organization had helped draft this bill or informed your thinking in some way.
Well, look, it's advocacy groups. I rely a lot on the Brennan Center for Justice, their data, their research. You know, I rely heavily on them because I, generally speaking, they get it right. But there are other advocacy groups and publications and research that I read on a regular basis when I determine, you know, this kind of legislation, when I put forth this legislation, and I also speak with other my colleagues in the Senate. People have more experience in this issue. So it's a combination of very many things before I put pen to paper on legislation.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Luis Sepulveda. He is a Bronx Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for having me on, and I look forward to the day when we're back on the basketball court.
From your lips to God's ears.
All right. Be well.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and health care.